Anthony E. Casey Foundation.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. This is the Fund Drive here at WMNF. Still trying to raise $250,000. So we've got a few more days to go. Yesterday, by last night, we had raised $88,000. We're further along than that. So we thank all those people that have made contributions so far to WMNF. As the next 2 hours, we're trying to raise $6,000. Sean Canan is with me, and we're going to try to raise that money over the next 2 hours. We're going to hear from NOLA, too, in the next hour. Several people have called up already. Thanks to Anonymous in Tampa, made a $150 contribution and says, loves WMNF from north, south, east to west. No other station compares. And taking that Pacifica Radio Voices flash drive. Thank you, Anonymous in Tampa. And also thanks to Anonymous in Sun City Center, making a $50 contribution, like Midday Public Affairs here on WMNF. So thanks, Anonymous. That's two, Sean. And we've got we have to hear from about 70 people if we're going to reach that $6,000 goal.
Well, here's a couple more. David Thomas from Tampa enjoys listening to WMNF and catches Amy Goodman and Richard Wolf a lot. He's a new member, and he's donating $25. He called 813-239-9663. That's the number that you could call to support the show as well. Also, Dolores Brown from Mango listens to the morning shows and enjoys the news and public affairs. She says, keep up the good work. She's getting that flash drive from Pacifica Radio Voices that changed the world with a $150 donation. Thank you for that. Tina Hennies, I'm sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Hennies, I believe, Tina. Brooksville is contributing to the Radioactivity block all week long. Thanks for all the great public affairs programming. And she's getting the WMNF event passport for a $365 contribution to 88.5
wow.
FM.
Tina, that's a big help.
And you can contribute as well by calling 813-239-9663 or pledging on the secure website WMNF.org.
And in just about a minute, we're going to go back and hear the last part of Democracy Now!, which we didn't get a chance to play earlier. We're going to start with Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal from Washington State. She was being interviewed by Amy Goodman about the question of immigration. So we're going to hear that in just about 50 seconds. But I want to let you know that Democracy Now! This morning only raised $1,000. And its goal, we were hoping to raise $3,000 while Democracy Now! Is on the air. So let's see if we can raise another $2,000 in the next few minutes. The number to call, 813-239-9663. Duncan, did you want to thank some more people before we go to Democracy Now!
Yeah, if I could, Rob, just two quick folks who came in after we signed off. So one of those is Jay Ullman from Sarasota, who is getting a Talking Animals t-shirt. So thank you. It says, great job in your work, Duncan. And the other is Laura Bechtel with a nice $400 pledge getting the Willie Nelson tickets. So thank you, Laura, and everyone else. And we hope that people continue to support WMNF at 813-239-9663 or online at WMNF.org. Thank you.
All right. Well, way to go. You reach your goal. That's terrific. So we're going to try to reach our goal on this show too, and hopefully the fans of Democracy Now! And Radioactivity and the Midpoint Public Affairs programs will come through. Again, the phone number, 813-239-9663. Sean, I'm a little bit concerned about Democracy Now!, but we're going to hear it right now, and we only heard from about 12 people calling to support Democracy Now! When we aired it earlier. We're going to hear the last 10 or 12 minutes of it right now. But let's see if we can get, boy, it'd be great if we got 10 more people to donate to Democracy Now!
Are you one of the people that supports Democracy Now! If so, we need to hear from you. Now's the time, 813-239-9663.
Well, this is a real test to see if this a really well-done program is something that deserves to continue on WMNF. We know that you're out there. We know you love this program. Well, give a little bit of help to this radio station that has brought you this program since day one, since 1996 when Amy Goodman started the program. We have carried it every day since. So we are one of the flagship Democracy Now! Stations in the country. Please help us stay on the air. Make your tax-deductible donation by calling 813-239-9663. Sean, I'm looking at the phones, and they're not lighting up, but we are going to trust people. Here is Congresswoman Jayapal from Washington State answering that question about immigration and immigration reform. And we're hoping that there's one good person out there who will make a contribution now by calling 813-239-9663.
Bipartisan deals on immigration that even give a significant amount on assessing the border, determining whether or not money is needed and how it's needed in exchange for 1.8 million dreamers getting a path to citizenship. But Trump has said that he wants to end legal immigration as we know it. He wants to get rid of the diversity visas. He wants to do all kinds of things that are fundamentally changing the family-based immigration system in this country and legal immigration. So he wants to be magnanimous, but he's saying trade 1.8 million dreamers for ending the ability for 22 million immigrants to come to the United States as parents, as adult children, closest family members. So I think the Senate is grappling with whether to make it a large proposal or a narrow proposal. I think the only way it passes if it is very, very narrow. Paul Ryan has said that he's not going to bring a bill to the floor unless Trump is going to sign it, which means that he's not really interested in making a deal on DACA. And ultimately, we have to remember, it is Trump who rescinded DACA and created this crisis. And if we are not able to pass this, the lives of 800,000 dreamers, actually 1.8 million young people who may not have gotten DACA but are dreamers and would be eligible for deportation, may be deported. And so I'm feeling furious about the way that this administration has handled DACA and the unwillingness of Paul Ryan to bring a bipartisan bill. In the House, it's the Hurd-Aguilar bill that would, I think, already has 30 sponsors on each side and would actually be able to pass if they would just give us a vote on that bill in the House.
Finally, it's day 8 of the Porter scandal of the staff secretary, a very high role in the White House, very close to Trump, with CNN reporting he was going to be elevated to deputy chief of staff. Well, this is all until not information came to the White House about him beating up his two wives. One, we now have a picture, but only because a picture came out showing the black eye of one of his wives. So you have this question of what the White House knew when they knew it, including President Trump himself, and not to mention General Kelly, his chief of staff, and his speechwriter quitting. Over Sorensen, over allegations that he ran over his wife. Oh, he ran over her foot. And you have the women themselves who have accused President Trump of sexually harassing or assaulting them, saying they want Congress to investigate the president himself. Your thoughts?
Well, I've called for General Kelly to step down. I think it is outrageous that a chief of staff would allow an alleged abuser with hard evidence, not from just random sources, but from the FBI, to actually stay, that he would propose that he be promoted, that he would be given the highest, essentially, access to classified information without permanent security clearance. You know, Me Too, Amy, you know this better than anybody. Me Too was not just about the women who were abused or the men that abused them. It was also about the cover-up of all those involved, the men and the institutions that covered it up and refused to believe the women that stepped forward. That is exactly what John Kelly has done. It's not unexpected from Trump, who has these accusations of sexual assault against him. We recently found out that he paid off one woman through, well, now they're saying it's not through his campaign funds, but this is a man who has consistently shown disrespect for women. He supported a pedophile in Alabama, and he continues to show tremendous disrespect. John Kelly, in this particular case, allowed this to happen. We have sent a letter to Kelly, my colleagues Ted Lieu and Brenda Lawrence and Jamie Raskin and I, sent a letter to John Kelly saying, what did you know when, and why did you keep Rob Porter. Why did you encourage him to stay, and why have you allowed this kind of disrespect to women to continue? I think John Kelly needs to go.
And the president, do you think he should be impeached?
I think, well, you know, I signed the impeachment articles that Steve Cohen, my colleague Steve Cohen from Tennessee, drafted. I have voted twice on the floor to begin the discussion on impeachment because I really believe that this president continues to be in violation of the Constitution. He now has new properties, by the way, that he's trying to hide through LLCs. Even as he said, oh, he's not going to be involved in business anymore, this president is making enormous money on the backs of Americans across the country. He's using the Oval Office for that. He's bringing tremendous disrespect. He equates white supremacists with those who are fighting white supremacy. I think he needs to go.
Pramila Jayapal, I want to thank you for being with us. Democratic Congressmember from Washington State, Vice-Ranking Member of the House Budget Committee, and Vice Chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, speaking to us from Congress. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, it's 20 years since V-Day began. Stay with us.
And we'll hear that conversation in just a little bit. And this is WMNF in Tampa, looking for a donation right now, just looking for one right now as we try to raise $6,000 in the next 2 hours. Tony Johnson from Gibsonton made a donation of $5 a month, Circle of Friends. Thank you, Tony, for that nice contribution. We're going to need to hear from about 69 more people between now and 1 o'clock. And we are going to hear more of Democracy Now!, I think. Looks like it's interrupting a little bit. So let's hope that Democracy Now! Is able to come back. If you are one of those people that likes listening to Democracy Now! And you learn something new from the vast array of guests that Amy Goodman invites on her show every day, we hope that you'll become a member of WMNF and keep this great program on the air. We bring it to you every day, usually between 9 and 10 a.m. And it's also rebroadcast on our HD3 channel at 5 in the afternoon and at 8 in the morning, too. So you can listen there. But we're looking for that first donor right now, this break, at 813-239-9663. Sean, any word? Anybody else?
Yeah, you know, I was back in the phone room and I was so excited to see a donation come in, and it turns out it was for a music show.
Oh.
So we do have people who are supporting the station, and that's great, and people love our music shows, and that's fantastic. But we need to hear from people who like Democracy Now! And who like Radioactivity and who appreciate the great news in public affairs. Now is the time for you to call in. We don't want to have, I mean, it's great that the music shows make their goals. That's fantastic. But we can't be dragging the whole marathon down here with the public affairs and with Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Really needs to pull its weight. Give us a call now, 813-239-9663, to show your support for community radio and Democracy Now! 813-239-9663.
Sean, we want to thank Wayman Pearson from Tampa. Says, loves the station, love Democracy Now! From the first time, they say. And they're making a $50 contribution
great
to WMNF. That's really good. So we're going to need to hear from about 68 more people. The number to call, 813-239-9663. We hope that you'll call that number, 813-239-9663. Let us know that you're out there. You know, when we play Democracy Now!, people wake up. When we play Democracy Now!, people hear all sorts of things that they're not going to hear on commercial radio. Many times, you're not going to hear these kind of conversations on commercial TV, on cable TV, on broadcast TV. Amy Goodman is an oasis of information that it's hard to find this information in electronic media anywhere. And that's why we hope that you will support the program, because it is unique. Amy is fearless. She has gone in front of soldiers with rifles and brought her cameras and microphones there and showed human rights abuses around the world. She's gone to places where there are environmental struggles. She herself has been arrested in covering environmental struggles. And she is just probably one of the most fearless reporters ever I'm sure that books will be written about her in the future, and future generations will say, wow, did you know that Amy Goodman did this and this and this? So we're proud to carry your show. We've carried it since the beginning in 1996, but we hope that you'll make a contribution today to keep it on the air. The number to call, again, wow, 813-239-9663. And we have that Pacifica flash drive that includes 1,350 hours of programs from Pacifica. We would like to give you one of those for your donation of $150. So you can make your donation online, too, at WMNF.org. Sean, we're having trouble with the playback here, so we're going to do something a little bit different. But we're going to switch gears a little bit and listen to a radioactivity program from a few days ago. This is an interview with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson.
Oh, that was great.
And Wilkerson was an aide to Colin Powell, helped Powell prepare the speech that he gave to the UN that led to the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and then later on said that that was one of the low points of his career. Wilkerson is a retired colonel in the Army. He now teaches for a living, and he is a fierce, fierce critic of some aspects of U.S. foreign policy. He came down to Sarasota 2 weeks ago, 2 weekends ago, to give a speech to the Florida Veterans for Common Sense. And before he came down, I interviewed him, and he said so many amazing things. So let's listen to that interview right now. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, and this is one of the reasons why we think you should support WMNF, because we bring you interviews like this. Here is Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, welcome to WMNF.
Thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about the Vice President's recent trip to the Middle East. He said there that the Trump administration wants to pull out of the landmark 2015 Iran nuclear deal unless the pact is amended. What's your take on that?
Well, from the first point of view, there is no real possibility for the JCPOA to be amended. Our partners in it, including Iran, simply won't let it happen. Europe, in particular, I think, is going to go its own way. And I know Russia and China will, almost with 99% certainty. So it was really kind of a ridiculous statement, unless, of course, your ultimate objective, which I think this is the case, is to abrogate the deal and to not give a damn, frankly, about your allies and others in the deal. His speech to the Knesset, such as it was summed up best, I think, by a friend of mine who is a Christian in Jerusalem and who remarked to me that, as he had done in 2002 when Powell was visiting as Secretary of State Arafat in Ramallah, that the most formidable foe Christians face in Jerusalem and in the area in general is Israel, not the Muslims, not Arabs, not Palestinians, but Israel. They're most oppressed, if you will, by the fact that Israel continues to spread its territory in both the city and the West Bank and elsewhere. And that really frightens them. And I think Pence identifying so readily with Israel, apparently because he feels that in accordance with the biblical prophecy, Israel has to be, or the land around Israel, and Jerusalem in particular, has to be controlled by Israel before the rapture can occur, was really tantamount to taking the Bible and hurling it into foreign and security policy in a way that I think is quite dangerous.
I understand that, but I'm curious, why would a Christian feel threatened by this? Because I know that there's a lot of evangelicals here in the U.S. that are cheering on the Trump administration when it comes to, for instance, moving the embassy to Jerusalem.
True, but not all of them. I find the 48 to 68 million now evangelical community in the United States to be quite divided itself. You have sects like the Dominionists, with whom I identify people like Mike Pence, who, for example, want to take over the armed forces of the United States and get them to act for God and Jesus rather than the Constitution and the United States. These are very radical sects within the evangelical community, and I certainly don't paint that whole community with the same brush that I paint them. The reason I think For example, in 2002, the head of the Christian church in Jerusalem told me that he was very concerned about Israel's policies and more concerned about them than he was any Muslim or Arab or Palestinian policy, was that they were really antithetical to Christian interest in the region. The Christian interest, basically, whether you're talking about the head of the Greek Orthodox Church or you're talking about others in the region who profess to be Christians, is to live with everyone and to have stability and peace and ultimately some sort of prosperity, whether it's Jerusalem or Israel or what might become a Palestinian state or whatever. That's their policy. They don't see that as the hard right-line policy of Bibi Netanyahu, Avigdor Lieberman, and other ultra-Orthodox people who are pursuing really a Zionist policy from Tel Aviv. And they're very worried about that because they feel like they'll be the first ones to go.
Hmm. We're talking with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Colonel, getting back to Iran, though, it looks like the U.S. is taking sides in the dispute between Iran and Saudi Arabia in that part of the world. The so-called Sunni-Shiite split, I don't know if you would agree that there is such a split and if it's a fair characterization or it's too simplistic, but it looks like the harsh words towards Iran and the selling of arms to Saudi Arabia indicates that we're leaning towards Saudi Arabia in that dispute. How would you characterize what's going on there?
No, I'd characterize it exactly as you just did. The United States, particularly under Trump, but Obama too. Obama really sold more arms to the Saudis than almost any president since World War II. So he might have cloaked his rhetoric a bit, but his actions were as bad, if not worse, than Trump's with regard to Saudi Arabia. And I think what we're seeing right now is not a sectarian divide so much as we're seeing a power struggle into which I would thrust Israel too, but that's a different matter, between Tehran, Riyadh, and ultimately Tel Aviv, with Tel Aviv sort of sitting back and watching and seeing who the United States backs at any given time, and of late, because of Tel Aviv's essential alliance of opportunity with Saudi Arabia, which has seen such bizarre things as Saudi Arabia identifying with Israel's move or wanting the U.S. to move its capital to Jerusalem, which has made Jordan's king angry, very angry, and I don't blame him for being so. And we're perturbating our traditional allies in the region by doing this. But what we have is a power struggle between basically Riyadh and Tehran. And we have a new leader in Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, a young man who, among other things, started one of the most brutal wars the region's seen in a long time, the war in Yemen. And increasingly that conflict, being lost majorly and miserably by Saudi Arabia, that conflict is being viewed by the people in the region, particularly in Yemen, as the U.S. with the Saudis acting as our proxy. And so you get things like U.S. Special Forces who are in Yemen legitimately fighting al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, one of the most powerful al-Qaeda elements in the region. You get the SOF, U.S. Special Operating Forces, saying, hey, this is crazy because every time the Saudis bomb another wedding party and kill 144 people, as they did the other day, we get 10 to 12 more recruits a minute for al-Qaeda in the peninsula. So we're losing our struggle against the most dangerous enemy in Yemen while you back Saudi Arabia killing all these innocent civilians, men, women, children, and perpetrating one of the greatest humanitarian disasters since World War II, cholera, lack of food, and so forth. It's a tragic thing, and the Saudis are losing. So our being so close to Saudi Arabia right now, Israel's tacit alliance of convenience with Riyadh because of Tehran, and our opposition to Tehran, which now looks like, if you believe Secretary Tillerson's speech on 17 January out at Stanford, we're getting ready to throw U.S. forces into Syria to continue the struggle there, but this time with Iran, you understand the poison that's developing in that region to suck the United States into its midst. I mean, it's an extremely dangerous situation, and we seem to be playing checkers rather than chess like all the rest of the players in the struggle. and I don't leave Russia, and I don't leave Turkey out of that.
Hmm. In the long term, if you look at Iran and its potential to turn into a secular small-d democracy, or if you look at Saudi Arabia and its potential to emerge as a secular democracy in the long run, which has the most potential to go in that direction? And maybe that's not the question I should be asking, but, you know, if we're going to choose sides, should we choose Saudi Arabia over Iran?
I think that's a very dangerous decision, and I think Obama more or less reinforced that, and I think Trump has, with his sword dance in Riyadh, and I think, frankly, a fundamental ignorance about the region, reinforced it. And you're right. If I were picking my allies, my friends, my potentially powerful countries in the region for the future, I definitely wouldn't be picking Saudi Arabia. Hmm. Now, that said, I still have to remember that Saudi Arabia has a lot of that black gold left and still denominates its oil sales in dollars. And other than the United States military and those oil sales denominated in dollars, there is not very much standing of any hard nature behind the United States dollar today. And so if we were to suddenly break with Saudi Arabia, as one senator said to me the other day when we were talking about the illegal U.S. support for Saudi Arabia in Yemen, and it is illegal, it's unconstitutional, it's not covered by the authorization for the use of military force. When I was talking to this senator, he said to me, yeah, I know, Larry, I know what you're talking about. Understand the war is illegal, and in accordance with Title 50, the War Powers Act, codified into U.S. law. And I also understand that Saudi Arabia is a treacherous ally, but we can't afford to back away too rapidly from Saudi Arabia because of the dollar. And I understand that argument. I understand that argument. But all I'm saying is, in the long term, your question is a good question, and the answer is, yes, there are better partners in the region than Saudi Arabia.
If Saudi Arabia was to go off the dollar, where would it go? To whose currency would it turn?
Well, the UAE, in a threat to us, I mean, I can't see it any other way, has already begun to denominate its oil sales in euros, and occasionally when they're in Asia, in renminbi, the Chinese currency. And the Chinese have been sneaking up on our currency ever since Deng Xiaoping declared that one day China would be overwhelmingly more economically and financially powerful than the United States. Yeah, they're getting to a position now. They're already the number one economy in the world in terms of purchasing power parity. And in another 10 to 15 years, they're probably going to dwarf us in terms of GDP as well. So this is something that people aren't paying enough attention to at Treasury and the White House or wherever. The Chinese threat to, I think it's 32% of our notes they own right now, our Treasury notes, the Chinese threat to start selling those is, that's just the tip of the dagger. I mean, they have quite a potential to damage us if they want to. Now, they don't do it fast, and they don't do it profoundly yet, because it would, of course, damage their economy, too, because they're still selling majorly. But it's coming. It's coming, and it's apt to be sort of like on Monday we go to sleep and everything's fine, and on Tuesday morning we wind up and inflation's off the chart because we've lost the power of the dollar as the world's reserve and transactional currency.
Our guest is Lawrence Wilkerson, former aide to Secretary of State Colin Powell. Getting back to the question of moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, a good idea? Does that advance the cause of peace in that region?
I don't think so. I'll wait and see. I'll reserve my opinion and see what else they do. But basically what I see happening with Netanyahu's government, both from design and from political necessity because of the really somewhat fragile coalition he holds together in the Knesset, is very dangerous. It's Zionism writ large. I think his profession recently that Golan is his, that the West Bank is his continuing with the settlements as if no one objects, his move with regard to reinforcing the U.S. decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem, all these things are part of his plan. I think he is not in the least interested in a two-state solution. I think he has declared it dead privately. He's almost done it publicly. And I think he's going to go from that position. I'm not even sure that he doesn't covet, ultimately, portions of Jordan. And I think the royal family in Amman realizes that. And so we're looking at probably one of the most precarious situations with regard to Israel's ultimate long-term security since 1948. And that's the overreach of Bibi Netanyahu and his cohort.
Well, we're listening to an interview with Lawrence Wilkerson, a colonel that used to be the top aide to Secretary of State Colin Powell in the Bush administration. Wilkerson has come out as a fierce critic of U.S. foreign policy, and he's a truth teller and a plain speaker, as you're hearing. This is typical of what you hear on Radioactivity. If you enjoy listening to these kind of interviews that I try to bring you every day, please call us up right now and help us during our fundraising drive, where we're trying to raise $250,000 over 7 days. And between now and 1 o'clock, we want to raise $6,000. Thanks to several people who've called in. Thanks to Anonymous in St. Petersburg, loves democracy now the most, and taking that Pacifica Radio Voices That Changed the World flash drive for her $150 donation. So thank you, Anonymous. Kathleen Oxhorn from Tampa has made a $100 contribution, says this program is more important than ever. Thank you, Kathleen. And thanks to Richard in Lakeland, made a $150 contribution, and Richard is getting that Pacifica flash drive, 1,350 hours of programs from Pacifica, and we'll tell you more about that in just a moment. But if you think, if you want to hear interesting people interviewed every week, every weekday, here on Radioactivity, we hope that you'll make that contribution right now. Here's the phone number, 813-239-9663. If you like the interviews that I do, and if you like Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Did not reach its goal today, so we're still trying to raise another $2,000 for Democracy Now!, $2,000 for this show, and also $2,000 for NOLA's Midpoint program, trying to raise a total of $6,000 to kind of make up the deficit. Please call us up at 813-239-9663.
Rob, I have a couple of people to thank. Rich Carpenter from Tampa likes Rob's show, Richard
Thanks,
Wolf,
Rich.
And Amy Goodman. He's getting the DVD of Harvest of Empire for a $150 donation. Thank you for that contribution. Also, Sandra from Spring Hill, $50, is getting the WMNF Peace Magnet, loves the dedication of Juan Gonzalez and Amy Goodman. And we have a new member, Rosie Griswold from Winter Haven, likes Democracy Now!, is contributing $30. We need to hear from you. Can you make a $10 a month donation or a $5 a month donation? 813-239-9663.
We're going to go back and hear more of this interview with Lawrence Wilkerson. He reveals so many amazing things in the next few minutes, so stick around. You don't want to go away. Just want to let you know that on this Pacifica flash drive that has 1,350 hours of programs on, it includes an interview with Bart Ehrman, who is a biblical scholar who says that much of what we think we know about the Bible is wrong. There's a program featuring him on this. Also, there's a remembrance of Cesar Chavez, the leader of the United Farm Workers Union. And there's more than 50 programs featuring Alan Watts, the philosopher, on this. This flash drive includes interviews with Phil Oakes and Odetta and Cornel West and Mario Savio of the Free Speech Movement. It includes a long section about the American Indian Movement, a long section about the Gay Rights Movement. It includes a long section about the Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. It has lots of music programs, including lots of classical music programs, and Pete Seeger is on this. Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers are on this. So is our comedians like Dick Gregory and George Carlin. So many great programs on this flash drive. For a $150 donation, it can be yours. 813-239-9663. Or you can use your phone app. Go to the tip jar when you go back to your phone on our homepage, the WMNF app homepage, and look for the tip jar, and you can make your donation there. Or you can go online, go to WMNF.org. Well, Sean, we've only got one person calling. Oh, here's another person that just donated a $35 donation from Bradenton. Thank you, Anonymous in Bradenton, for that $35 donation. We got to raise $6,000 in the next hour and 20 minutes. I think we can do it, but we've got to get at least one call right now. at 813-239-9663. I want to go back and play more of this interview with Lawrence Wilkerson because he reveals so much about the status of the U.S. military. You need to hear this. But please make your contribution so we can continue to bring you interviews like this. Sean, we got to get one line lit at 813-239-9663.
You can also contribute online at WMNF.org to support great programming, great interviews like this, the one that you're hearing right now. Give us a call, 813-239-9663.
The other day, on a different topic, Army announced that it was looking at preparing to send 1,000 more troops to Afghanistan, adding to the, 14,000 U.S. troops that are already there. What do you make of that?
I think there's been a strategic decision in the Pentagon, if not in the White House. And it probably was in the Pentagon because I think Trump has pretty much turned Afghanistan over to the, quote, generals, unquote. I think there's been a strategic decision that the Taliban are second, third, even fourth priority in Afghanistan. What our presence in Afghanistan is about now is very strategic, and we will be there for another 50 years because of that. The first strategic purpose for our presence there is to maintain hard power in the only position that it exists now in substantial form to impact, if necessary, the so-called Chinese trillion-dollar effort to build a Silk Road between Xinjiang province in China and ultimately Europe. This includes pipelines, both gas and oil. It includes things like the economic corridor they've now built across Kashmir and into Pakistan so that they're exacerbating the Pakistan-India situation. It involves enormous amounts of economic effort that we can't possibly match because we simply don't have the money. So we're sitting there in Afghanistan now, first and foremost, in case we have to use hard power against the Chinese in some way. That's a good position from which to do so from that flank. The second reason we're in Afghanistan is that we want to have hard power close by the most dangerous and arguably unstable large stockpile of nuclear weapons in the world. It's in Pakistan. And we want to be able to move swiftly and dramatically in order to control those weapons if we have to, if things really go bad in Pakistan. So I think the Taliban terrorists, they're third priority, fourth priority in Afghanistan. And I think we're going to be there as we were in Germany, as we were in Japan, still are, as we were and are in Korea post-World War II, for another half century or so, because this is the new great strategic game. China, U.S., Russia, and Central Asia.
China's using its money, to build public works projects in Africa and developing nations. We don't tend to do that. Is that a mistake on our part? Is China making more friends around the world? Or what is China doing by building these public works projects in Africa and the Caribbean and everywhere else?
First and foremost, and when Richard Haass and I were talking with Wang Yi and Shui Ten Kai, now the Chinese foreign minister and ambassador of the United States, respectively, in July in 2001, when we held policy planning talks in Beijing, we actually got an inkling of this. It's a positive development if the Chinese are not aggressive and not seeking hegemony in doing what they're doing. If what they're doing is to make money for themselves while elevating other countries in the world, making them more prosperous so they'll be better clients for buying Chinese products and so forth, it's not unlike what we did with the Marshall Plan after World War II. But I fear that when a country grows as powerful as China and as rich as China, and this is, you may have heard of Graham Allison's the Thucydides trap, which, you know, very simply stated, means a rising great power and a status quo great power are inevitably going to fight. I hope that's not true. I hope Graham's wrong in that thesis. But it is a historical phenomenon one can point at. It's very difficult to imagine how if China becomes more and more aggressive in its pursuit of these other regions and these other countries, then the United States is going to feel threatened, and we're going to wind up, as Graham posits, we're going to wind up having a war between China and the United States. And there are so many hot spots like Taiwan and the South China Sea and Afghanistan and Pakistan that I could paint a fairly logical path to that war. I hope I'm wrong. Mm. But that's part of the problem with the Chinese rising as fast as they are and being as rich as they are. I mean, they've got trillions of dollars to spend, and when you ask the question why we don't do it, we've got trillions of dollars in debt.
Mm. Well, one of those hot spots is North Korea. President Trump is taking credit for what appears to be a thaw in relations between North and South Korea in regard to the Winter Olympics. Does the president get the credit for the thaw, or was that something internally going on over on the Korean Peninsula?
I think he'll take credit for whatever happens in the world that looks like it might somehow serendipitously have flowed from his rhetoric. I don't think he deserves any of the credit at all. I think the credit there goes to the new regime in South Korea, who probably would have moved even more rapidly to do what they're doing with regard to the Olympics had we not thrust into their midst, just as their administration was changing, the theater high altitude air defense problem, which has caused them great angst with China and shown them how powerful China is. When China got angry at that and pretty much cut off about a third of the Korean economy because China is Korea's biggest buyer and biggest trade partner. So we essentially relaxed a little bit after that because we realized we were driving South Korea away. And this administration's policy, not unlike the previous administration from this group of politicians, has been to seek some sort of rapprochement with North Korea. And this is that effort starting once again with this new administration. So I think it's fairly preposterous for Trump to take claim for this because it would have been South Korea's policy all along. It might have even started even earlier if there hadn't been all the rhetoric and particularly if there hadn't been that deployment of the THAAD to South Korea.
Hmm. One last question, and that is the State Department staff has been downsized under President Trump. At least he's not hiring to replace the people who've left. And then at the same time, both the Democrats and Republicans have wanted to increase military spending. As a guy that once worked in the State Department for the Secretary of State, what do you think of that?
There are a number of things that Tillerson has done, however imperfectly and inexpertly, that I would have probably done too if I'd had carte blanche. The State Department was way too heavy in people that had really nothing much to do except draw paycheck. So that's the first comment. The second comment is going into the raw bone and muscle of the State Department now, though, is, I think, a mistake of the first order. And that's what they're doing. And they're not doing it just by the moves Tillerson is making, but by the lowering of morale amongst the Foreign Service in particular that these kinds of what they view as inept moves create. So you might wind up waking up one morning and having a third or more of your Foreign Service gone. That's not good. Secretary Gates and Secretary Clinton, to their credit, when they took over respectively defense and state, began the first effort in a long, long time to sort of tamp down the military effort and money and transfer or at least ensure an increase in diplomatic effort and in money going to that effort. That's been stopped completely, reversed, and put in an accelerated downturn now. I think that's very sad because I think what this administration is doing, and it's going to be extremely complex and difficult for the new president, whether it's in 3 years or 7 years, to reverse this process. What Trump is doing is dismantling diplomacy as an instrument of national policy. Now, what he would say he's doing is he's transferring it from Foggy Bottom in the State Department to the White House. Well, I've got news for President Trump. That's been happening ever since Richard Nixon in 1972, because Republicans have always, and Democrats too to a certain extent, tried to consolidate foreign and security policy in the White House with the National Security Council staff and keep it away from the State Department. But Trump has put a new spin on that and taken it to a new depth. So when you look at people like he has assembled around him, and indeed look at the president himself, and you say, they're going to conduct diplomacy for the United States of America in lieu of the State Department, that scares the bejesus out of me. And in order to reconstruct what they've destroyed in 7 years or 3 years, it's going to take a whale of an effort and a lot of money. And it's just pitiful that we're doing that.
Do we need to build up our military? And when the president said the other day during the shutdown that the Democrats were keeping paychecks away from military personnel and their family, was he right? Or is this the increased money for the military going to things beyond just members of the service?
This is going to be heresy coming from a 31-year veteran in the United States Army, but I think one of the healthiest things that could happen to the Pentagon tomorrow morning would be if it got cut several billion dollars. And over the next 10 years, it got cut $100 billion per year and a total of $1 trillion. And I can show you a plan to do that. I can show you the systems I would change, the strategies I would change, and so forth. Because as we've seen so many times before, when you get too much money, you become fat, dumb, and happy. And all you can think of is screaming for more money. And that's what we've got now. And I have a lot of respect for Jim Mattis, and I have respect for Chuck Hagel and other secretaries of defense, but they've all come in there and ultimately become exponents of the status quo. Things like F-35 aircraft, which we need like a hole in the head, and cost so much that a single aircraft bodes to bankrupt us. And the Air Force putting the new bomber online, the Navy putting the new ballistic missile submarine online, we're looking at costs that are just astronomical. When Eisenhower made his speech to the Society of Newspaper Editors in 1953 and said, this is no way of life at all under the threatening cloud of war. This is humanity hanging from a cross of iron. That cross of iron was the military-industrial complex. And I don't think even Eisenhower envisioned how powerful that complex would ultimately become. And we're slaves to it now. The war in Yemen, for example. Look at Raytheon's share price. Look at the other defense contractors who are contributing to that war. And you know immediately why the United States, or at least one big reason, why the United States continues to support the Saudis, the UAE, and others in that coalition in that bloody, losing conflict. And it's because defense contractors are making so much money out of it.
So there is waste in military spending.
Huge waste.
And when the president says that we're denying money to the soldiers, you're suggesting that we're maybe denying money to the defense contractors.
That's part of it. Part of it also, though, and this is something the American people need to become aware of, the all-volunteer force decided on by Richard Nixon in 1973 for largely political reasons is falling apart. It's too expensive. When you have an Air Force that is 2,000 pilots short and is willing to pay $455,000 bonuses to pilots who will sign up for a 12-year hitch, and when you have people like my son, who is a Reaper drone operator, telling me about working 12-hour shifts instead of 8, and shortages and so forth. And when you have an army, the American people need to awaken to this fact. there are more soldiers recruited in the state of Alabama with a population of about 5 million than are recruited from New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago with an aggregate population of over 30 million combined. Most of the Army now comes from 13 states, and those are generally the states that are most poverty-stricken, that have the highest rates of obesity, the lowest rates of affluence and intellectual competence. We're costing ourselves out of the military by personnel costs. I just read an article in Proceedings magazine by a sailor, good article, and it says the Navy needs ships like the Zumwalt, the newest guided missile ship, that are automated, because it can't man its ships. I almost fell off my chair when Trump said he wanted a 350-ship Navy, because I wanted to shout at the president, where are you going to find the people? Because you can't pay for them. The all-volunteer force is so expensive today that better than 50% of a $600 billion defense budget is being spent on people.
Well, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, thank you so much for coming on WMNF. I could spend another 5 hours hearing what you have to say on all these topics and more, and there's a bunch we didn't cover, but thank you so much for coming on WMNF.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was an interview I did a few days ago with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson before the military got that 10% increase. Wilkerson was about to speak in Sarasota, so I did an interview with him just before he spoke. Well, we're raising money here at WMNF. If you appreciate, if you realize that an interview like this is not going to be carried on your local TV station or on your local cable channel, that you're not going to hear somebody so plainly speaking about the military, and he is bipartisan in his criticism, but boy, you are not going to hear this many other places. Wilkerson is the former chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell, and if you appreciate these kind of interviews, please make that contribution right now. Help us stay on the air. Thanks to Anonymous who did that. They listened from 12 to 1, and they just made a $100 contribution. Thank you, Anonymous. Sean, we've got a challenge on the table, too. We will get an extra $500 if we get five $100 donations or more in the next 15 minutes.
Well, we really need to hear from you. 813-239-9663. If you can make a $100 donation, it will effectively be doubled for us. So thank you for that in advance. Call 813-239-9663 or pledge online at WMNF.org.
We got to get these lines lit. We're looking at the phone lines above our heads and not one is lit up. Let's see if we can get one donation right now. The number to call again, 813-239-9663. Remember, if you donate $100, your donation will be doubled by, John DeYoung in Tampa, who made a $500 contribution to WMNF and wanted to use it as a challenge. So, John, thanks for your donation. Well, let's see if we can get one line lit right now. Here's the number to call, 813-239-9663. You can also make your donation online at WMNF.org. And this is really crucial, though, the number of independent media sources in this country is really shrinking. And there are very few independent radio stations like WMNF around. Most radio stations are owned by chains. Most radio stations don't bring you these kind of interviews. And we're trying to keep independence alive. We're trying to keep truth alive, too. We're trying to find the best, most accurate sources of information for you. And we can't do it without your donation. Your donation keeps us independent. It keeps us strong. It keeps us on the air. So please make that contribution now. We desperately need, we've got to raise $4,000. We've got an hour and 5 minutes to do it. Here's the phone number. If you believe in community radio, if you believe in independent thought, if you believe not having a big brother broadcasting network, please call us up right now at 813-239-9663. Sean, it'd be so great to get at least one phone call right now.
Okay, we really need to hear from you right now. Do you like Radioactivity or Midpoint or Democracy Now or any of the news and public affairs shows that we have during the midday here? 813-239-9663. I want to thank a couple of the food donors who have donated food to our volunteers who will answer your phone when you call 813-239-9663. The Independent Bar and Cafe, located at 5016 North Florida Avenue in Tampa, has prepared sandwiches and hummus platters for the hungry volunteers. Thanks to Veronica Danko for doing doing that again. And I want to thank our breakfast donor, Einstein Brothers Bagels, located at 5003 East Fowler Ave in Tampa, for their donation of bagels. And volunteer Jim Shirk has prepared a strata for egg casserole for the early rising volunteers, and he was answering phones. So thank you to all of our food donors. Now I want to thank you for your financial donation, and you can do that by calling 813-239-9663.
Yeah, we do still have that flash drive that features 1,350 hours of Pacifica programs, including programs featuring Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, Gore Vidal, Jessica Mitford, Bob Dylan, Dizzy Gillespie, Alan Watts, Jimi Hendrix, Daniel Berrigan, Nelson Mandela, Robert F. Kennedy, John Coltrane, Jim Morrison of the Doors. We've got that Voices of Pacifica flash drive for a $150 donation if you call right now, 813-239-9663. Remember, we've got a challenge on the table, too, and that is if we can get five $100 donations or more in the next 15 minutes, we'll get an extra $500. Let's see if we can do it. NOLA is coming up after the top of the hour here. This is WMNF in Tampa. Remember the number to call, 813-239-9663.